the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
A long time ago in a dandelion dynasty far, far away with Ken Liu.
I'm Julia.
I'm Paul.
Today we are interviewing Ken Liu. Yay! Welcome, Ken.
Hi! Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on as always.
And it's super exciting because you have written a Star Wars book.
I have indeed. It's a dream come true, and I'm super excited that it's going to come out in about a week.
Yes, on Halloween, The Legends of Luke Skywalker.
That's right.
So an excerpt of this book just dropped on Entertainment Weekly, so we've had a tiny, tiny teaser of it, and we know that it is a series of stories that other people in the galaxy are telling about the legendary figure Luke Skywalker. But what more can you tell us about this? Like, what was the concept idea? How did it form? Why did you do this particular book?
Yeah, totally. So you will have trouble shutting me up because I love talking about Star Wars. This is like the best thing ever. So as you well know, Disney Lucasfilm Publishing is putting out a series of books leading up to The Last Jedi. Part of that, they came to me and asked if I would be interested in writing a Star Wars book. Now, I'm a lifelong Star Wars fan, and I can tell you the story of how I got to be a fan later. But basically, when they came to me, I was like, yes, you know, like, whatever, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. So I thought about what sort of stories I wanted to tell. And two things really sort of popped to the front of my thought process. One is that I really wanted to write a book aimed at the junior level, the 8 to 12 year olds. The book I wanted to write would be one that would be enjoyable for everyone from 8 to 88, or maybe even 108. It's but the focus of the book is to appeal to the 8 to 12 year old market because, you know, my daughter is just 7. So she's on my older daughter. So she's on the verge of being the perfect audience for this. And I've always thought that, you know, Star Wars is the story that's all about wonder, about what Lucas called this sense of effervescent giddiness. And that was the sense I wanted to convey in the book about Star Wars. And the other thing that popped up was the idea of trying to explore the character of Luke. Luke is really fascinating to me, not from the perspective of being, you know, the hero in the monomyth who goes on the hero's journey. Rather, it's the way the monomyth gets refracted and becomes a spectrum of different myth, depending on who you are. You know, in our world, we have legendary figures who become sort of canvases on which people project their fears and hopes. We look at a legendary figure, let's take somebody like George Washington, all right? This is somebody who has become, you know, a legend. As a founding father, you see paintings of George Washington doing things that he never did. You see these paintings of him crossing the Delaware, which of course could not possibly have been the way he actually did it. You don't stand on the boat like that. That's not how you do it. And you hear these stories about what George Washington and the cherry tree, you know, which are of course tall tales. And these legends and myths and mythologies and tall tales about important figures in culture become a shorthand for all of us who talk about what we ultimately want out of life. So I thought, you know, one of the interesting things that hasn't really been done in Star Wars before is an in-universe exploration of this idea of myth-making, of legend-making, of how somebody whose deeds become greater and whose name become greater than the reality. How would different people react to the idea of Luke? What would an Imperial think about Luke? What would a child growing up on a faraway desert planet think of Luke? Well, as we know, Rey says, Luke Skywalker, I thought he was a myth. So that kind of gave me the idea of trying to write a book of in-universe legends and myth and tall tales about Luke Skywalker to explore the idea of myth-making in this meta format. Star Wars itself is, of course, a modern commercial mythology. It's a shorthand by which we speak to each other about, you know, the evil empire, meaning the Yankees, of course, about Darth Vader, about the Force, about what it means to trust in the Force. We use these figures of speech now as just a shorthand for conveying a mythological universe of information to each other. And I said, let's take a meta. Let's go into the Star Wars universe and think about how different types of characters in Star Wars would think about Luke. And that was the idea. And I pitched it to Lucasfilm and they loved it. So that's how the book came about.
That is awesome. And I should say for our listeners that the Yankees reference is because poor Paul, a New Yorker, likes the Yankees, and Ken and I, both being in Boston, would like them to just be defeated soundly multiple times. So this is a little inside baseball, if you will. Anyway, I'm sorry for that. You can't take me anywhere. But yes, Ken, that is awesome. And I want to hear all about how you got into Star Wars fandom and everything like that, but I also kind of want to give Paul a chance to ask a question.
Okay, so let's dive a little bit into more how this book was constructed and why you picked the way you did, because from what I understand from this book has six different stories from six different points of view, although the one excerpt I read seems to have a point of view within a point of view. So how did you pick those particular points of view to get six different Rashomon-like views of Luke Skywalker?
So as you know, we get this, you know, maybe 1 second glimpse of Luke at the end of The Force Awakens. So everybody's asking, you know, what happened to Luke after Return of the Jedi? What was he doing? And of course, you know, there had been some canon books and material exploring that, but that gives me the space to construct these legends. The thing about telltales and legends is that they may be true, they may be made up, they may be distortions of the truth, they may contain a kernel of the truth. I can't tell you the status of these. You know, that's one of the other things that's kind of fun about this book. It's a canon book, but it's deliberately unreliable. I love that this is a canon book in which the information you get is deliberately, purposefully, outrageously from the start, not reliable, and gives me a lot of freedom to explore the concept of Luke. And in a more serious vein, the perspectives, politics, culture, psychology of other characters in Star Wars, because as I say, it's about legends, and figures of legend are canvases on which we paint our fears and hope. So given that as the premise, I wanted to pick six very distinct points of view from within the Star Wars universe to explore Luke. So as I mentioned, you will hear stories being told from the point of view of the Imperial, you know, for whom Luke is the enemy, the great, the figure in the dark who brings death to Imperials. You will hear stories from children in distant worlds who encounter Luke in some ways as a stranger, stripped of his aura of awesomeness. You'll hear stories from conspiracy theorists who have explanations for what happened in everything you saw in A New Hope, but who don't even realize that they perhaps Luke is actually among their audience. You'll hear stories from tiny figures who were there, but you didn't pay attention to. You'll hear stories from scientists for whom the idea of the Force is truly just a bit of superstition. But everybody, you know, in the book has something to say about Luke. But you mentioned six stories, and that's true. But there's actually a seventh story, which is the framing story around all six stories. The book is structured so that you encounter a group of young deckhands on a deep space freighter going towards the planet Katanica, and specifically towards the port city of Canto Bight, which is this pleasure city of casinos and entertainment venues and so on and so forth. And these children deckhands, you don't become a deckhand, I'm afraid, or like that as a child if you haven't had quite a difficult life. And so these kids get together and along with other members of the crew, they entertain themselves by recounting these stories they've heard from around different corners of the galaxy, from cantinas, bars, docks, and what have you, where people have been sharing, swapping tales about Luke Skywalker, and they tell each other these stories. But it turns out that they're not just passively telling stories. They're actually going on a little adventure of their own on this deep space freighter. And so this is the seventh story, and Luke Skywalker becomes connected to that adventure as you read on. So that in effect, there are actually seven stories about Luke throughout. And you're right, the book is constructed so that there's lots of stories within stories, multiple layers going up and down. And maybe some readers will wonder whether that's too complicated for 8 to 12 year olds. And I don't think that's true at all. I think kids are very, very capable of deciphering complicated story structures, narratives. And in fact, they love it. My daughter makes up these stories for me. And it's always like, one character tells another character a story who tells another character a story within the story. And then sometimes they're so elaborate that they put my novels to shame. So I think kids are great at understanding complicated stories, but which at heart have a simple message.
That's fantastic. It sounds like the Decameron meets Achilles and the Tortoise from Goldil Escobach meets Rashomon in the Star Wars universe.
I love it. That should be the blurb.
For kids.
Yes, for kids. I forgot that. For kids.
So, speaking of kids, you said you've been a Star Wars fan your entire life, which is also true for me. And I would love to hear more about how you got into Star Wars and what your history is and what about your kids? Do they love Star Wars?
Totally. Okay, so that is a super great question. So I got into Star Wars in a slightly unusual way. So when Star Wars came out in the 70s, early 80s, those films were not allowed to be shown in China. And I was a kid in China back then. And so I didn't get to see these films at all. I had heard about Star Wars, however, as a result of President Reagan's speech about Star Wars. So,
wow.
So that is probably a somewhat unusual first encounter with the very concept of Star Wars. But, President Reagan talked about Star Wars, so that was in the news. And I heard about it as a kid, and it really, I really didn't understand what he meant. I was picturing these spaceships shooting lasers at each other. And I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. And then when I was in second or third grade, I can't remember exactly when, but this was in China, and we had something called a free reading period. And so this is where the teacher would come in with a box of books and everybody would pick out a book and then we would read for like an hour. Now, because this is free reading, the books were, not textbooks. These were fun books. These are books you don't normally get to read. And so we were all super excited. When the box got to me, I think I had two choices, or at least I picked up two books. And one of them was biography of the great sage Confucius, written for children. And the other was this book that had this amazing cover of somebody riding on a furry animal with a light sword in his hand. And there were spaceships going overhead, shooting lasers at each other, going pew, pew, pew. And I was like, oh, this is the most amazing thing. I have to read this. My teacher, however, was very disapproving of my choice. So she was like, wow, you really should try to use your time wisely. Wouldn't you rather have this biography of Confucius instead? And I was like, no, I like the pew, pew, pew. So she was very disappointed in me, but I kept that book. It turns out that book was the novelization of The Empire Strikes Back. So that was literally my first actual exposure to the Star Wars universe. And I fell in love with A Galaxy Far, Far Away right away. It was such an awesome book. I just could not believe that somebody could imagine such a world where, there was magic and technology at the same time. And there were great Jedi Knights and awesome blaster-wielding princesses, and everything was just super cool. That was, incidentally, also the very first science fiction and fantasy book I ever read. So I got my foot into fandom by books, not through the movies, amazingly enough. It wasn't until years later, when I moved to the U.S., that I actually got to see the movies, which were, of course, also awesome. But in some ways, in my mind, the canonical version of Star Wars was, in fact, the imagined visions based on the novelization of The Empire Strikes Back. That would always be the foundational vision of Star Wars for me.
This is an amazing story. I love this story so much. And I really wish that I could see how you imagined it looking.
Oh, this is actually really funny because during that time, because the movies weren't allowed to be shown in China, there were actually comic books put out for kids in China to tell the story of Star Wars. And because the artist had not seen the movie, so they had to imagine Darth Vader and Princess Leia and C-3PO and R2-D2 all on their own based on the verbal description. So these comic books are now very rare, but if you can get your hands on some of them, they're amazing because the artistic vision of what these characters look like is just out of this world. They're nothing like the original because, of course, you know, the artist hadn't actually seen the movie. So they're completely different. And the vision in my head was also very different from ultimately, you know, what the movie versions were. But regardless of that, here's the second part of the fun story. So I kept on growing up. I kept on reading Star Wars books. I love them. I bought them all. I devoured them. I read every single trilogy that came out. And then I was in college. And I can't remember. This is like junior year, maybe. It was during finals period. And I had to take a final exam the next day. And this was some sort of social analysis type of class where I hadn't really been paying that much attention during the semester, and I knew I had to cram for the final to do well enough to pass. And I was not looking forward to that. So this was the day before the final, and I was like, oh God, this is so dreadful. I need to find some way to encourage me to study. So I went down to the Harvard bookstore and bought the latest trilogy, Star Wars trilogy, and I brought it back, and I was like, okay, so I'm going to study for 15 minutes, and then I'm going to reward myself by reading a chapter of Star Wars. So I study for 15 minutes. Yeah, you know where this is going.
Oh, no.
So I study for 15 minutes, and I flipped open the first book, and I said, oh, this is so cool. I read one chapter, and I was like, you know, that's only one chapter, which is not enough to restore my energy to study more. Let's read a little more. So I read another chapter, and then another chapter. And before I knew it, it was like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and finished the first book. And I was like, well, it's already 11 o'clock. If I read another book, I still have, you know, a few hours more to study. So I'll do that. So I did that. So by the time the third book was done, this was like, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, something like that. And I was like, okay, this was not the best idea in the world, actually. It turns out that there's no time to sleep, and I had done no studying whatsoever, and the final is going to start in like an hour.
That's not true. You did 15 minutes.
Thank you. So I went to breakfast, and I was running through the yard to wherever the exam was, and I was just in my head thinking, you know, if my teacher from second grade could see me now, she would tell me, this is exactly why I told you you shouldn't be doing this. You see, this is what happens. but the happy ending is I did pass the exam. I mean, I'm sure I did because, you know, I did not fail the class. So whatever happened, the Star Wars reading certainly gave me enough information to pass that exam. And I regret nothing. And especially since, you know, even years, decades after graduating from college, I get to write a Star Wars book. So everything, you know, comes around in a big circle, and it all makes sense. You know, it was as if I had been following on the path of some unimaginable transcendent energy field that suffuses us all and was pushing me towards a particular destiny.
The force is strong with this one. So I'm really curious, do you think that your second grade teacher would be happy and impressed with you writing a Star Wars novel now?
You know what? If I don't know how to get in touch with her, but I would be so interested in hearing what she has to say now. I wonder if she even remembered this episode where she was, you know, trying to get me to pick the words of the sages over, you know, lasers being shot in space. And you know, everything seemed to have worked out all right. So I bet she'll be like, you know, it's good. Everything did work out okay.
Awesome. So what about your kids? Do they like Star Wars?
So my little one, who's only 5 years old, doesn't quite have the attention span yet for a full-length feature film. And then I think A New Hope was a little too much for her. I tried it with her and she's not quite ready yet. My older daughter does like Star Wars. So I'm planning on getting her through the entire original trilogy before showing her a copy of my book. I hope she will like it. I'm very excited to see how she reacts.
So your novel coming out at the end of October is not your first foray into the Star Wars universe now, isn't it?
Oh, that's very true. I did also contribute a story to From a Certain Point of View, which is an anthology of 40 stories by 43 authors recounting the events of A New Hope from a different perspective, the perspective of characters you probably haven't thought much about from the original film.
Yes, your story is called The Sith of Datawork, and it has to do with a fleet logistics officer.
That's right.
Which sounds awfully weird, like what kind of position I would probably wind up in if I was in the Star Wars universe, a bureaucratic paper pusher.
Well, just to be clear, we don't have paperwork in the Star Wars universe. We have data work.
Data work. Okay. Correction accepted. So out of all the possible places to show a different story within A New Hope, why in the world did you go for a fleet logistics liaison aboard the Devastator?
Well, one thing that, so I love reading about the Navy, you know, our actual real world navies and then how they function. And turns out that the Navy runs on paperwork. People spend a lot more time filling out forms and checking checkboxes than they do shooting guns or preparing missiles. Every Navy, submarines, what have aircraft carriers, what have you, they run on data work. The military, especially the Navy, is a giant logistics bureaucracy. This aspect of modern military organization isn't always appreciated. And I thought, you know, it's kind of fun to imagine how that would play out in the Star Wars universe, because the Empire and their Navy is actually, the Imperial Navy actually is also a very much a bureaucratic contraption. And I wanted to explore the inner life of bureaucrats. You know, as a former tax lawyer, there's nothing more interesting to me than about revealing the world through regulations and intricate rules and the way people take advantage of these rules and how they can learn to manipulate forms and communiques and regulations and exceptions to regulations and loopholes, and almost as if it, again, were some sort of a powerful energy field on which, by tweaking certain things, you can make ripples of great effects happen all around you.
Interesting. Now I can understand why you call him the Sith of Data World.
Yes.
Now it becomes clear.
Yep.
So does that sadly mean that he died by the time of Return of the Jedi?
So the main character of the story is a bit of an interesting, I mean, this is somebody you don't ever see in the film itself, but this is somebody whose actions are very important in The New Hope. So everybody knows that part where the two Imperial officers are standing by their view screen, looking at the escape pod, shooting towards Tatooine, and saying, you know, hold your fire. There's no life forms aboard. And so, you know, countless questions have been asked about why exactly did they not shoot? What is the reason behind not shooting? And how do they get out of being in trouble afterwards when Darth Vader found out that these two idiots actually allow the escape pod with the plans for the Death Star to escape? So this is a story that explains just how these two managed to save themselves. And this is the character who tells the story of the Sith of Data Work is a master of bureaucratic responsibility evasion. Because one of the great things about bureaucracies is that it's very, very good at diffusing and deflecting responsibility. When you're working in bureaucracy, that's one of the most important skills you can possibly have. So with the aid of my narrator, the imperial officers essentially learns to construct an escape pod of sorts for themselves. And so exactly how this is done, you will have to read the story to find out.
I'm just curious if he's aboard the Devastator. Was he aboard the Devastator 2 movies later, or did he get a cushy planetside job? And
you know, I like to think that the Sith of Datawork managed to actually escape. I like to think that you know, the hints of danger had alerted them to the possibility of perhaps taking a shore leave on the planet just in time to avoid going down with the Devastator.
Okay, so I am so curious about this. I always ask people this because I feel like it says a lot about you. Do you have a favorite Star Wars character? And if you do, who is it and why?
Well, I mean, you know, since we're asking this right after I finished a book about Luke, I've got to say it's Luke, because going so deeply into the canon and reading all about Luke and trying to think through all the things that could be happening to him and all the things other people might imagine to be happening to him has, you know, made me feel closer to him in a lot of ways. Before, you know, writing the book, I enjoyed thinking about Luke, and I certainly loved following him on his journey. But after writing the book, I feel like I got to know him a lot better. Not just, you know, the real Luke, but also the visions of Luke around the galaxy. It's you can't help but become attached to the subject of your obsessions in some ways, right? Because I was working for so long on thinking about Luke and how other people relate to him. I ended up getting very deep into the character. So I would say Luke is my favorite character right now. And I wonder, you know, how that would change as if I move on to do more Star Wars projects in the future.
Has Luke always been your favorite character? Like when you were in second grade and you picked up that novelization of Empire Strikes Back, was Luke your favorite character then?
No. Back then, my favorite character was actually Darth Vader. I thought he was the most amazing. Yes.
Wow.
I thought he was the most amazing character. I was like, wow, look at him. He is so cool. Well, you know, back then, I just thought he was the greatest.
Huh. Wow. That is fascinating. Paul, who's your favorite Star Wars character?
Who's my favorite Star Wars character? Oh God, put me on the spot. It's not necessary. Okay.
This isn't supposed to be hard. It's just like the first thing you naturally gravitate toward.
Go with instinct.
Yeah, I should use the Force, shouldn't I? Okay, I will use the Force, and I come up with, ironically enough, I come up with Biggs.
Really?
Because he didn't have to get drawn kicking and screaming into the rebellion like Luke did. I mean, Luke practically had to be kidnapped by Obi-Wan Kenobi to actually, Biggs actually had the fortitude and the desire to actually get in from the get-go.
That is true. That is very true.
That's a good point. Luke is a little whiner, man.
Luke is definitely a whiner. No doubt about it.
Too interested in his moisture farm.
No, he hates the moisture farm. He wants to get away from it.
He hates the moisture farm. Yeah,
yeah, but he's being guilted into staying, and he won't say, like, no, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, I want to go to Imperial Academy. I'm doing it. It's like, he just said he whines about it.
Yeah, but you know, all of us have been there. You know what I mean? That in some ways, we were all the whiny Luke. You know, maybe that's why we don't like that aspect of him. It reminds us of us.
Okay, so now I know this is Ken's podcast, but I have to tell you how I got into Star Wars, because it's not nowhere near as amazingly strange as Ken's. But so back in the 70s. Back when the world was young, they had this Star Wars Death Star set that you had the figures, and we begged and pleaded, and we got it for Christmas. Now, mind you, my parents didn't take me to movies. They didn't take any of us to movies, so I didn't actually see Star Wars. So I had this Star Wars set. I had some figures, including, ironically enough, since this was 1980, it had to be 1980, I had the Empire Strikes Back version of Han Solo in the little polar outfit. I had Luke, I had Han, I had a couple stormtroopers, and I had this Death Star. I had no idea what actually happened in the movie. So I had to keep making up my own stories as I moved the figures around the Death Star, because I had no idea what actually really happened in Star Wars.
Oh my god. That's amazing.
So the first, actually, Return of the Jedi in 1983 was the second movie I ever saw in a movie theater at age 12. So I finally got to see Return of the Jedi. So I finally saw a Star Wars movie two movies late. So I didn't actually get to see Star Wars as itself until it came out on VHS.
Wow. That is a cool process.
It's not cool, as cool as imagining from the Empire Strikes Back book, but yeah, I had a weird Star Wars entry. Julius is probably much more rational by comparison.
I just love hearing all this stuff. It's like Ken's book come to life. Because you were both having to make up your own mythology about these legendary characters.
That's right.
I did. I mean, usually I just had the characters go around and sabotage the laser gun. Because I figured, okay, the laser gun's important. But, you know, which I didn't know was a Death Star destroying planet thing. It's just like, there's this big gun in the set at the top. It's like, okay, that must be the most important thing. So my characters have to go sabotage that. So that was the plot. And sometimes they'd fall in the trash compactor, which had these little foam styrofoam things and the trash monster in it. But, you know. And it had the little bridge. It was great. I mean, these things probably hundreds of dollars on eBay if you could even find one now.
Of course. Oh my god, if you still have it.
Have you read Nnedi Okorafor's story from the Points of View book?
No.
Oh my god, read it. You will love it.
Oh dear, I have to do this.
You totally have to read it. I'm not going to say anything more about it. Just read it.
We won't spoil me or my listeners any further.
No, but Nnedi Okorafor is wonderful, so you should read everything she writes anyway.
That I totally agree with.
Yeah, my entry to Star Wars was, I mean, really pretty tame. I was born in 1978, so Star Wars has always existed in my lifetime. And the first time I remember seeing A New Hope was probably in 1982. I was probably about four, and I know that my mom's church had a viewing where, like, somebody had managed to get some kind of, like, bootleg VHS copy of it. that they showed on a projector, but like the first 5 or 10 minutes of it was really like the tape had degraded and it was really woogy. And so it was sort of like blurry and you couldn't really get what was happening for the first 10 minutes. And then suddenly it was like everything resolves and we're in the desert and there are droids. And I was just captivated by this. I was four and I remember loving it. My favorite Star Wars character has always been Chewbacca. There it is. I don't know what that says about my personality. Maybe that I really appreciate people who can only express themselves through, like, grunting. I'm not sure.
Yeah, this is totally like the what house of Hogwarts do you belong to? You know, that sort of question. It really reveals a lot about your personality there.
It does. It really does. So yes, I love Chewbacca with all my heart. I also saw Return of the Jedi in the theater, and that was the first Star Wars movie that I ever saw in the movie theater as well, although it was not, I don't think it was the first movie I ever saw in the theater, but it was the first Star Wars movie I saw in the theater. And I have to say, I have always loved Ewoks, but I know Ewoks are super controversial, so I want to know, how do you guys feel about Ewoks, yes or no?
I love Ewoks. They're awesome.
Ewoks are stormtrooper eating badasses.
Correct.
Yeah, they totally.
Correct.
They're badasses.
I fear Ewoks. I mean, the Ewoks could have easily wiped out the little rebel troop, and that would have been the end of the rebellion right then and there. They got lucky. They were able to get C-3PO to play the God Gambit.
It's a good point. It's a very good point there.
So how do we feel about the new cute creature that we've seen a teaser for in the trailer for the Last Jedi?
The porgy thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I need to see the entire movie before I judge. I mean, we have been burned before. A certain character on a certain planet who shall not be named.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. And in terms of the character you're talking about, Paul, you will enjoy my book. the character makes a cameo appearance. I think you will appreciate.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I'm so looking forward to reading that cameo appearance.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so I knew you and knew your work. You made your bones back in the day writing short stories. Then you jumped into big, fat, epic fantasy with the Dandelion Dynasty novels. I love Wall of Storms, the second book in the series. So how did it feel going from that back to a short story and into a middle grade novel? How does it feel like that shifting that gears from big, long form with multiple characters and timelines and years passing to much more compact, shorter stuff that you had done earlier in your career?
Well, these are very different challenges, and they're all fun in their own way. I mean, one of the things about working on the Dandelion Dynasty is that it is a very big world that grows bigger with each book, in fact, with each chapter. And the thing about world building is the more you world build, the more you must keep on world build. So it's gotten to the point where it really is very difficult. I've had to resort to technological means to keep things straight for me. I don't know how novelists before the advent of wikis and personal search engines and personal databases and all these things managed to do what they did. I have to rely on a lot of technological aids to keep the world, not from falling apart. And the novels are very complex and layered and multiple plot lines to keep straight. So it's a big challenge, even though I enjoy it. But working in the Star Wars universe is quite different. Here the world isn't just all constructed by me. I'm one member of a chorus. I'm here to do collaborative storytelling. I think that's one of the amazing things that's happened to Star Wars. You know, the vision was George Lucas's, and then he gave this to the world. And then under Lucasfilm and then also under Disney, there's this concerted, careful effort to manage the collaborative storytelling process so that all of us get to build the work of legendary creators and giant who came before us, but are also allowed to bring our unique vision, unique perspective, and to broaden and enrich the universe so that it truly feels like a grand galaxy in which wonder, magic, and good and evil can have their ultimate combat. So I to write the Luke book, I work with the story group at Lucasfilm. I can't say anything about the details of how that went, but suffice it to say that I got a lot of support, and it was a very enjoyable experience to have these folks behind my back, if you will, to help guide me to make sure that the story works for the Star Wars universe. It was a wonderful experience. I really enjoyed working with Jones, the artist, as well. And it was such a fun experience to sort of see my work, the scenes I was writing, come to life under his pen. So everything about it was very fun. It's not at all like working on my own novel. And I found the challenge really interesting because it's a different kind of writing. And of course, in terms of writing short stories, I've been doing that since forever. Yet, despite the fact that I publish over 130 pieces of short fiction now, with every new story, when I'm, given either a prompt or I just want to do something because I have an idea, I feel like I have to learn how to write a short story from scratch because, every story is so different and demands such different skills that I don't feel like things I've learned before is terribly helpful. I mean, some writers, I think, are very good at extracting, extrapolating lessons and rules and principles about writing that they can apply to their next project. I've never found that to be particularly helpful. I enjoy the feeling of not knowing what you're doing and just jumping in and swimming and trying to figure out anew how things work. And I always get the sense that that with every story, I'm trying something new. It's not something I've done before. So, you know, I don't get bored because I'm learning constantly how to work at it. So, yeah, it's all different challenges, but always enjoyable.
Huh, that actually spikes a question I was going to have. I was going to ask you if when you wrote the Veiled Shanghai for the Oz anthology, if that working with previously existing material was something that aided you in writing for the Star Wars universe, but it doesn't sound like it did.
No, in fact, it's a very different kind of experience. I mean, in the case of writing the Veiled Shanghai, which was based on the original Oz book, which are out of copyright, not the movie. Because, you know, I was working with material that's not in copyright. It's not so much a collaborative effort as with other writers as it is a collaborative effort with readers. Because the idea here is I don't need to, quote unquote, respect the original because I can do whatever I want, really. It's not an effort in which the goal is to satisfy the demands of an ongoing piece of corporate IP. I could do whatever I wanted with it. And that's a very different kind of thing than writing Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is, a franchise that's very much owned by one of the most powerful corporations in the world. And trying to tell a story in the Star Wars universe is quite difficult. You're trying to work with both the demands of commercial reality, that this is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Star Wars is commercial mythology. But at the same time, you're also working with a very active fandom that's incredibly passionate about these characters and stories. And because it's actively managed as a piece of IP, you have to make sure you understand what your role is and how to fit your work into the great grand tapestry that many other creators are creating right around you at the same time. It's not a long effort. And I think that aspect of it really was very, very challenging and fun and a great learning experience for me.
While Star Wars is one of your heart universes, is there any other IPs that you would write for given a chance?
I gotta say, if given a choice between writing within somebody's IP universe versus creating my own original thing, I would almost always go towards creating my original thing. But Star Wars is very special. As I told you and Julia, I came to it in a very nostalgic way that was very important to my childhood, and it was something that really, in some ways, introduced me to science fiction and fantasy. Because of the special place Star Wars holds in my heart, doing this work for Star Wars felt like such a joy and such a pleasure that I think will be hard to replicate with any other IP franchises. All of us have our favorite fandoms, and it's very hard to imagine another one where I can be as passionate as I am about this one. I guess the only other one I can sort of think of that would be comparable is one that may not be familiar to Western audiences, but the martial arts novels, the wuxia novels by Jin Yong, the great Chinese novelist, those, as a piece of active IP, I would really enjoy doing some sort of expanded universe stuff for. That is another world that be incredibly important to me in my childhood, and in some ways, the aesthetic and sort of tone of those novels can be seen when I pay homage to them in my Dantian Dynasty novel.
Aha! So see, now that's a reference and a substrate I didn't get because I'm not familiar with that urtext, but I'm sure that certain readers did, and that they had a more rich experience for being where you see where you're tapping that.
Yeah, I think people would enjoy it if they pick it up. They would see, you know, here's a little nod and wink at this wonderful universe that we all knew as we were growing up.
Well, I'm just going to go back to what you were saying, Ken, about how every time you write a new story, you have to learn how to write that story over and over again. And it's always a new experience and a learning experience, and you're always learning and growing. And I have to say, I think I understand now why you passed that exam in your junior year, because you must be one of the fastest learners in the world. You're so prolific. Like, I know, because I've worked with you before and I've given you a prompt and had you turn a story around in like a week or less. And I know you do this like all the time. You're just like, yeah, sure, I'll do this thing. It might take me a while. And then 30 seconds later, there's a finished file. So I think that 15 minutes that you spent studying before you read the entire Star Wars trilogy probably taught you everything you needed to know for that class.
I love it. I love your explanation, which is so much better than my own explanation, which is, I don't know what I did. I must have made up enough things that sounded reasonable for the grader to be like, well, we'll just give him a D and let him pass.
No, but for a serious question, do you think that you'll write any more in the Star Wars universe?
I really hope so. A lot of the constraint is on, you know, time and the demands of my novels and also some translation projects and so on. But the way I see it, I think Disney has been doing an incredibly good job of managing the process of building out, of expanding the Star Wars universe. So I think, I really hope there will be other opportunities for me to play in it and to dip back in and explore some other corners of the galaxy I'm really passionate about. I think one of the things I really would love to do is to help, you know, in this ongoing process of expanding the range of types of stories and the tone of stories that can be told in the Star Wars universe. You know, as you can see from Rogue One, you know, we're now able to tell the kind of stories that really couldn't be told within the framework of the trilogy of trilogies. And so I'm hoping that the process will continue and that I'll get to have a chance to build on that and do something more. But as always, you know, because my interest is a lot in myth making, in legend, in unreliable canon, if you will. I mean, I'm interested in the unreliable canon of the real world. So in some ways, I suspect that everything I do for Star Wars, if I ever get a chance to do more, will always hover on the edge of this kind of unreliable canon. I think that's actually something I really enjoy. I like playing with that kind of instability.
Awesome. Well, I think we should probably wrap up. We've been at this for almost an hour, which is wonderful because I think I could talk to you about Star Wars for many more hours, but we should actually end this podcast. So tell us what else you have going on, what's coming up next, and any last words you want to say about your Star Wars book or anything else that you want to tell us.
And where can people see you?
Oh, sure. I am currently working very, very busily on my next Dandelion Dynasty novel. This is by far the most challenging book I've ever written. And having lived in this universe now for like 7 years, I feel like sometimes I know it better than the real world, which is frightening. But this is a challenging book to write because I do need to. It tackles many big questions, and there are many awesome silk punk inventions in it. So I'm working on it, and I'm hoping to get that done pretty soon. After that, there are a couple of other smaller projects coming up, and I'm hoping to get to my next new novel. But there should be a piece of a novelette that I did that will come out early next year with the MIT Tech Review, and they have this anthology called 12 Tomorrows. And Elizabeth Thayer and Monica Older and other authors will be in it with me. These are 12 stories of hard sci-fi based on technology that the Tech Review covers. And I'm pretty proud of the story I wrote, which is, I think, the only non-flash piece of short fiction I wrote all year. So I'm excited to share that with readers. If you want to follow and keep up to date with what I'm up to, you can find me on my website, which is kenliu.name, or you can follow me on Twitter, which is kyliu99. And the last thing I want to say about my Star Wars book, The Legends of Luke Skywalker, coming out October 31st, is that even though it's being marketed as a junior novel aimed at the 8 to 12 age range, I really intended to be read and enjoyed by fans of all ages. In fact, one of the primary sort of scenarios I sort of envisioned it is parents like me who grew up with Star Wars sharing it with their children who are now just at the age when they can appreciate a book like this and are just getting into the saga. I think that actually having parents and children read together a book like this is really something that I envisioned and very much hope to see people do. So that's it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with us tonight, Ken.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, it was awesome. On that note, everybody go out and get The Legends of Luke Skywalker, and we will talk to you again another time. Goodbye, dear listeners. May the Force be with you.
Listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at the Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Cronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.